Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito. And Alice is gesticulating. She's here with us. We are the ladies of Groundworks. We design and build gardens in New York City and the surrounding area. And our show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. So today's guest is Dr. Alan Armitage, horticulturist, writer, and traveler. We're so excited to have him on the show. We have tried to have him on for the past like 2 or 3 years, and we finally got him. But before we bring Dr. Armitage on the air, we have to do our now infamous horticultural honor roll. Thank you, Jack.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes. Okay, so as Dr. Armitage was born and raised in Canada, we're going to honor another Canadian.
Oh, Canadian.
You know? We don't want the Canadians to feel like we're so dominant, you know, culturally, and, you know, so we want to include them in our fold.
It's our nice neighbor.
It's our nice neighbor in the north. Anyway, our honoree today is John Davidson, who was born actually in Scotland in 1878. And I found him on the University of British Columbia's Botanical Gardens website. A really interesting story. He was known at the time as Botany John. And he was a botanist who popularized nature study through illustrated public lectures. So I thought he'd be the perfect guy to honor on the day that we have Alan Armitage on.
Yeah.
He also was instrumental in creating the Vancouver Natural History Society and the University of British Columbia's Herbarium and Botanical Garden. Today, many people consider Davidson an environmental folk hero for his conservation efforts. And as I said, he wasn't born in Canada, but he was actually born in Aberdeen, Scotland. But he came from a poor working man's background, and he couldn't afford university, and he was kind of ill, not very healthy as a young man, so he could not get a job, you know, teaching, which is what he really wanted to do. So in 1911, he had a sister in British Columbia, and he just came over here. And there weren't that many botanists around. And, you know, he kind of was on the forefront, you know, studying. He wasn't the first to study the flora of the area, but he really became passionate about it. Passionate about conservation.
And he photographed it.
And he photographed it, and he used these lantern slides, which was kind of like the technology of the time. And it was used for, it's, you know, predates film, you know, predates the Nickelodeon. And it was a way to sort of showcase anything in a visual way to a large audience. Mm-hmm. And then he also hand-tinted the slides to better illustrate the color. So on our Facebook page, I put one of the lantern slides of himself in a field, you know.
In his kilt,
you know, that was hand-tinted. And actually, these lantern slides now are collectible.
Yeah.
Because people usually threw them out. Like old technology is like vinyl records. Oh, people just threw them out. Or, well, now some of them are worth like thousands of dollars.
Right.
You know, because they're just not being made anymore. So I'd like to share a quote from Davidson, which kind of shows his mentality and kind of how progressive he was for the time. He had a kind of unusual empathy for plants. Here's what he says. It is easy to imagine the feelings of members of the vegetable kingdom as they see railways ramifying north and south and east and west like the tentacles of a gigantic octopus seeking to seize and demolish them.
Ramifying. Good word.
New word. SAT word. So we're going to put some links to the University of British Columbia's website on our Facebook page so you guys can read more about him and see what an interesting character he was.
Pre-Instagram.
Yes, that's how we got the message out. Well, we have an interesting character on
today.
We
have a great guest. Dr. Alan Armitage is well known as a writer and speaker and tour guide. He's a researcher. He was born and raised in Canada, and he lived in Quebec and Ontario, then in East Lansing, Michigan, where my grandparents are from, and Athens, Georgia now. He has worked with landscape plants and greenhouse crops in the north and south, and he travels from coast to coast and all parts in between, sharing his passion for plants. He holds his Bachelor of Science from McGill University in Montreal, which is the Harvard of the North.
Yes.
And a Master's of Science also from University of Guelph, and a PhD from Michigan State University, where my dad went.
Quite a pedigree, I
must
say.
So his career has taken him all over the world. He's lectured throughout the United States and Canada, as well as many countries in Europe, South America, New Zealand, and Austria. His knowledge has allowed him to write 13 books, countless academic papers. He has an amazing app, which I just downloaded.
Yeah.
And he writes articles for professionals and lay people, such as myself. He's been honored for his achievements throughout the country, and his list of awards and citations for his work in horticulture includes some of the best and highest honors anyone can receive, including the Kiplinger Chair at Ohio State University, the Alex Laurie Award from the American Society of Horticultural Science, the Gold Medal from the Mass Hort Society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
There's so many. There's
just too
many. The Scott
Medal from Swarthmore in Pennsylvania. Anyway, he has a great blog, and he's really fun. And welcome, Alan.
Wow, I am just so excited about this guy.
Who is this guy?
Hey, I must meet him someday.
Alan Armitage in the house.
So, Alan,
me instead.
Alan, do you consider yourself a Canadian or an American now?
Well, you make this Canadian thing. I'm really excited about John and all, but you know, we have a few other Canadians that have done a couple of things here and there, too.
Yeah, just a few.
you know, probably all the people who have ever talked about environmentalists and nature hosts and stuff knows of David Suzuki and Alexander Graham Bell, and
of course, yes,
our hockey players like Wayne Gretzky and Bobby Orr.
Oh yeah,
and of course, how can you not know? Unfortunately, you don't want to know him too well. Mike Myers, our actors, and Jim Carrey.
We know.
Take no credit for any of these people.
I know.
Dion and others. But we got a bunch of them out there. And yes, I'm afraid that I still am a Canuck at heart.
Good.
I have been here in the United States and love every minute of it for over 30 years.
Uh-huh.
But it's hard to get that ice out of our veins.
No.
I really am dual, and I defend America when I'm in Canada, and I defend Canada when I'm in America. So
good to know.
Go.
So, Alan, your passion for plants is so obvious. And we love to ask our guests this question. What drew you to horticulture as a profession?
Well, I don't think you have enough time to do this, because I'll just give you a couple of stories.
Okay.
Truly, as much as I enjoy writing about every plant known to man, when I go speak to any of your groups or whatever, I'm usually telling stories. And one of the, you know, when people ask you this question, I didn't have a mother or grandmother or somebody patted me on the head when I put seeds in the ground or something. There was no horticulture in our family whatsoever. In fact, I never even got into horticulture until after I had finished college. I didn't even graduate in horticulture. So it's kind of interesting, and I'll just give you one story to show you how it started.
Okay.
And then, because it will go on too long, really. But I was in college, I became a grave digger. It was a summer job. And so I was hired by the cemetery to literally dig graves.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big hole. But this particular cemetery advertised perpetual care, which meant in Canada and at this cemetery, it meant that we literally planted the grave site. So when the dirt was put back on, we planted it with bedding flowers for designs and all of those kind of things like you see in clocks and those kind of designs.
Wow.
And so, oh yes. And it was really fun. I knew nothing and I was digging a hole mainly. But at the end of one particular day, and I remember this like yesterday, I was tired, I was sweaty, it was, 5 o'clock, and we had just finished planting up this little gravesite, and the family came by, and of course, they were still in grief. It was just awful to see them.
Right.
But as soon as they saw the beauty of that gravesite, their demeanor changed. They were still obviously in mourning, but to see this, and I said to myself, my goodness, maybe there is something to do with this plant stuff. Maybe there is something here. So that was one of my very first encounters with horticulture. And of course, being a college dummy, I forgot about it the next day, but it obviously did stay there somewhere.
Yeah. Alan, my mouth is hanging open at the power of that story.
That is the best horticulture story. My life is the greatest philosopher in our time. Our greatest American philosopher is Yogi Berra. And Yogi Berra, the old baseball player,
right,
once said, which I tell to every student in every class I've ever taught, he said that when the path forks, take it. And that is how we all got to where we are today.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that is one of my paths, was that little story.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's many, many more in there as well.
Yeah.
But,
well, this is why this answer, this is why we asked the question. Because we hear stories like that, Alan, and we love, because most people's paths to horticulture is indirect.
Right.
And that's what makes them kind of interesting people.
Right.
So you found horticulture, and then ultimately you started teaching at the University of Georgia. So Alice and I were at the Garden Writers Association in Pittsburgh this year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we learned so much. There were just great themes about communication, about new generation. And one of the things that we took away from it and that we heard people talking about was people who were in the industry and who were teaching found that young people were discouraged by their parents and by other people from going into the field.
Right.
And we wanted to...
Oh, you're going
to
be a grass mower?
Yes. That's what... They didn't understand, and especially they were giving us examples of first-generation parents saying, well, I don't want you to go to school to then mow lawns,
So go into engineering.
So I'm, being that you've taught for so long and you've taught a couple of generations of students, what are people doing? What can we do?
Here's the deal. I taught high school long before I taught, before I went back to school. I was a math and a biology teacher in high school. So, I taught, I've taught every way too many people, but the premise is true. There are fewer kids going into horticulture, to be sure.
Right.
There were never a lot of them, and there was never a great push to see students in horticulture. They, as you just mentioned, they all kind of got there. And when I was teaching, and I just stopped, but most of my classes, if I had 30 people in a class, and when I at Georgia, when I was teaching the juniors and seniors, most of them got there through some other channel. So it's never been pushed. And one of the places it is not so much discouraged as simply ignored is in the high school guidance counselors.
Right.
Because when these kids are looking for guidance for what they're going to do, it is the sexy stuff. where I can make the most money.
Right.
The engineering and the medical and this, that, and the other thing. And horticulture has never been sexy. And so, yes, it is in fact lower today than it's been in some time. But having said that, I'm not talking too much. Having said that, I'm quite optimistic that we will continue teaching horticultural students for many years to come. But there may be some fallout. There may be some schools that, and what has happened in horticulture is that it's become no longer horticulture, but merged with something like plant science. And so then botany and, I don't know, and entomology and other things
right.
all get thrown in the bag, so horticulture becomes diluted.
Right.
That has happened for many, many years. It isn't anything new.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of reasons for it, that being one, that nobody right. ever talks about it. And number two is that, yeah, there's still a lot of poor-paying jobs. I mean, we can get 3 jobs for every student in horticulture. But, you know, they're kind of generally poor paying. But, I mean, I can go on forever on teaching and what I see. But this whole young people thing, you know, we all in the industry and horticulture gnashes our teeth about how we're going to get young people off their cell phones and actually working in a garden. And my answer is, you know, let them get older.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
we were all there. Maybe it wasn't a cell phone, but it was something else.
Yes.
And, you know, let them get a balcony, a patio, a garden, a house, they'll be there.
Well,
anyway, I'm much more optimistic than whoever was speaking, but there's no doubt there are problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're also hoping that with the emphasis and the so much of the growth in farming and young farmers and people
food.
And food,
where's your
that,
food coming yeah. from?
That it yeah. will maybe connect with, you know, agriculture and horticulture will kind of connect, you know, at the educational level and bring more people into horticulture that way, you know.
Well, we're the greatest, and again, I happen to work with this whole industry fairly closely, and we're the greatest increases and interest right now is certainly with vegetables. And I talk about greenhouses and garden centers and ornamental horticulture as opposed to farming.
Yes,
right. Yeah,
you know, because those people, your daughters and my daughters and their daughters' husbands and all, have, you know, have always embraced food. And now we're seeing really interesting breeding in plants, food plants that will go on the deck, that will go on the patio.
That's right, yeah.
Because we don't all have an acre we can put into vegetable gardens.
Right.
And gardening, the garden of tomorrow, Alice and Carmen, the garden of tomorrow, in my opinion, is the deck. It already is.
Right.
Yes.
And it's the patio, the balcony, the living area. And so if we can make plants, you know, work a little bit better in those areas, then we're going to have more people there.
Well, that's what I loved, Alan, about your app. Your app is so accessible, so easy to navigate. It has a great list of plants in alphabetical order, both annuals and perennials and vegetables. And then you also talk about great garden centers. And,
yes.
And that is awesome because it's like, okay, so you see this plant, you read about it, but where do you get it? You know, and how do you know what to do with it? And that's what's great about your app is that it's so simple and it's on everybody's phone. It can be. And it was brilliant, really clear.
Well, thank you. And it was kind of something that I thought, well, okay, I can write another book and stuff, but my daughter.
Yeah.
I talk about my daughters a lot because they're everybody's daughters.
Yes.
They're a little older. They have children. They have no time, no money.
Right.
That she's just not going to be able to. She won't look at one of my books. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
So, and we've made this gardening so darn complicated. Do you know that there are 5 books on gardening for dummies, and each one is over 200 pages?
Right.
Yeah.
What self-respecting dummy is going to read that stuff?
Right.
So we got to make it simple, and that's why I want to try the app. And thank you for your comments because I've worked hard on it. Certainly, one of the issues is not only and certainly every plant on there I've made it for my daughter. So there's a botanical name on there to be sure, but
right.
I try and keep it simple and how to succeed and things.
Right.
And then as you said, the biggest disconnect is where to find it.
So
hopefully this helps. And you know, I don't know, I have not gone after every garden center in the country because it would be another five apps. But you know, many of them that are on there, all of them are on there, have approached me because they see the benefit of
because people are walking,
and many more come on every day.
Yeah, and people are walking into stores with their phones and wanting to connect and get information immediately. And you know, let's face it, you know, the average garden center employee doesn't know enough, right? Let's be frank, you know. That's a nice way to put it.
I find that, you know, the owner learns about it, and then it's all of $4.99.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in your back pocket or your purse, whatever, and they say, and they have all of their employees download it so that if somebody does ask a question, this kid can go behind the post and look at this quickly and all of a sudden become a bit more of an expert.
Well,
it works well.
But also, like, all these young kids that are so into design, right?
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
want, like, the hottest thing. And like, it seems kind of vacuous. But then when you look at what they're photographing plants, and no, they might not know the name of it, but you know, they're zooming in on the colors of a Rex begonia, and they're saying, look at this, you know, blah blah blah. And I'm like, that's great. Now learn the name of it and learn how it grows, and then we've really got something. You know?
Well, truly, I don't know. And again, your audience out there, I'm sure many of them have children, and many of them have children with phones. Honest to God, they live on these things.
Yeah.
And so if it's not on the phone, some of them say, well, I want to find it quickly. And that's not to say that these kids aren't a heck of a lot smarter than we ever were. It's just that we have to take it to them now. We can't expect them to come to us.
Exactly.
Now,
I agree.
Having said that, you know, they don't want to do it. I don't really give a flip. But truly, I mean, you know, if they're not smart enough to enjoy this, so be it.
Yeah.
But we're gonna make it simple enough, to be sure.
Right.
Well, I have to talk about your book, though, because, you know, Alice and I kind of transcend the generations. We are embracing of all the new technologies. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, but we also have a pretty considerable gardening library, okay? And I fell in love with your book, The Armitage's Garden Perennials, many, many years ago.
I got my copy from the Hort Society of New York.
Yes, exactly. Talk about an old institution. and even then, back then, you know, 10, 12 years ago, there were a lot more gardening books being published. Let's face it. So we had a lot of choices. And why did I love your book? Well, it's your language. It's the way that you communicated the information. It was good information, but it was also in a style that was accessible. And
it's not scientific.
No. And I want to share with our listeners an example about a particular plant called Bergenia, which Alice and I plant.
Roll out the quote.
Yes. Or pigsqueak. So here's what you say about pigsqueak. You said, slow to become embraced by the mainstream American garden, pigsqueak is nevertheless offered by most perennial plant catalogs. So somebody must be buying it. If you want to impress your garden friends, rub a leaf of this plant between your thumb and index finger. If you're talented, everyone will soon hear the pig squeak. Be sure to practice on your own before you make a fool of yourself in public. So it engages you and it helps you remember the plant. Do you know what I mean? It's got information. Yeah. So how did you do that? How did you become like so accessible and so, you know, kind of boil down the information but also make it fun?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how I did it, but I know that, you know, if the saying that again, I hate to make all these silly things, but, you know, tell me the facts I forget, tell me the story I remember.
Yeah.
And I've used this in teaching forever. And this whole pigsqueak thing, by the way, those listeners, pigsqueak, Bergenia, you know, I think it's a reasonable plant, I suppose, if you're successful with it. But the most fun is just having somebody come with you and just make the pig squeak. They will never, ever forget
no.
that plant.
No, now, exactly.
They'll remember Bergenia.
Yeah.
No.
But, you know, what is actually well known out there are Armitage walkabouts when I go to gardens, whether it's a public garden or whatever. And we just walk about and I bend down and I make pigs squeak and I tell stories.
Yeah.
You know, if I see, if I see a centaurea, a blue centaurea, which some of your people might know when I tell the story, which is essentially a question, what was the kind of, how did young men in Victorian England let young ladies know that they were not married? Because, you know, it wasn't something they could get really close to and whisper in anybody's ear.
Right.
And what they did is they put a certain flower in their lapel button. Mm-hmm. And the flower, of course, was this blue centaurea that became known as
Bachelor's button. Yes.
And right. And all you do is you show a plant like that, they won't ever forget that story.
Yeah.
So that's a good fun. So anyway, that's what it's all about, is to make it fun, because gardening should be fun. You're going to have sore knees, sore back, and empty wallet, but it should be fun.
We can speak to that.
Oh. Hang on the line, Alan. We have to take a break. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back with you, Alan. Hang on.
Okay.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We have with us today Dr. Alan Armitage, horticulturist, writer, and traveler, and also dancer.
Disco star.
Now, Alan, I have to confess, we posted the photo. Somebody photoshopped your head onto John Travolta's body. I think it was on Garden Branch or one of those other websites. It's an excellent photo. We want to hear about that dancing that you did. I think it was for a charitable cause. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, in fact, if somebody really wants to, wants to have a good time, it's actually on YouTube, but we won't tell me the whole thing is on there.
Oh, I'm going to look that up now.
Dancing
with the Stars, and we have a program in Athens here, Dancing with the Stars, where we raise money to support, abused women and children. And so I was hooked up with somebody who knew how to dance, and just like the real program, I worked like crazy. You know, I'm fairly a coordinated guy, but honest to goodness, I didn't know what I was doing. But anyway, we did. So and then there were 10 couples, and everybody could vote on your performance, or they could, and we tried to raise money, so it was $1 a vote, and
aww,
people could, and it was always great fun. And again, the dancing was.
Did you do the hustle?
It was professional, but it was actually pretty good.
What dance did you do, Alan?
Nearly $95,000.
Oh, great!
Night.
That's amazing. So did you
do? It was terrific, and so a little fun, and for a great cause, it was great.
What was your dance?
Yeah. It was quite something. And I had my John Travolta suit on, and I had my hat on, and one of the things is I threw it into the audience, and of course I thought that was great. And at the end, the judge said, "Well, I would have given you better marks, but you injured somebody in the third row."
I hope it was your gardening hat that you had on.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of your traveling tours. You go to some amazing places. You just came back from the Maritimes, right, with
a
tour.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
And tell us about some of the gardens that you've seen.
Well, I have a little company called Garden Vistas, and I've goes to the great gardens of the world. So if you like great gardens and you like travel, this is just amazing. And we only take one trip a year, and we also sometimes do garden schools, which actually I might be doing next year. But so it's for about 10 days or 2 weeks, depending on where we are. And we find, like, we were in the Maritimes in Canada, so we went to Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, and Newfoundland, and we find a gardener, and a gardener finds another gardener, and then it's just a family of gardeners waiting for us to come, because it isn't a little bunch of ladies who want some tea. It is gardeners.
Right.
And many husbands or wives, spouses who are not necessarily gardeners, they come too because they just love it. We have a grand time. We see great places. So we've been all over the world, like Channel Islands, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, everywhere in Europe, Canada, of course, and
do you have a number of places. Do you have 2015 mapped out yet?
Well, I'm working on 2015. I'm thinking of doing a... We've done garden schools, which are just 5-day, where we do lectures in the morning and we do traveling in the afternoon. And, you know, people like to learn. And so this is a little bit different than our tours, although we might do one. But we're thinking of doing this in Maine in July.
Wow.
Next year. And it'll be on the website, and I'll let you know as soon as I know.
Well, that's a nice...
We're actually working on it right now as we speak.
That's a nice break from the Athens, Georgia heat.
That's a nice break for anybody, actually.
So do you pick places...
We're working on that, or we might go to Southwest England as well. I don't know. We got a couple of things on the go.
And how many people go on average?
No more than 25.
Okay.
Maximum, and it fills up pretty quickly, quite truthfully, because we find that those people who have been with us before, they like to come again.
Yeah.
And we try and make it as reasonable as we can. You know, it gets expensive, of course, but we try to keep it for gardeners.
Right.
And so gardeners are crazy in many respects and not very good at handling money, so we do our best.
You might want to... Have you ever been to the west coast of Ireland?
Oh, yes, we love Ireland.
Yeah, I went
We haven't been to the West Coast very much, though, quite truthfully, because there aren't as many great gardens there, but they're fabulous scenery, to be sure.
Well, actually, I was going to suggest the Burn has some amazing wildflowers that only grow there. Carmen actually got me a book for Christmas this year on the wildflowers, and there were some crazy things that I'd never seen before. Not that I'm the most... obviously, I'm not the most... botanically, you know, researching person, but it's an interesting place.
Have you been to?
Ireland is very interesting, and I love the West Coast because it's so brutal,
wild,
and you hit it at the right time. It's beautiful. It's just fabulous. Well,
where in Italy have you been, Alan?
I'm sorry.
Where in Italy have you gone?
We have not done Southern Europe, and only because of me. I've done France. I haven't been Italy, Spain, or Portugal. I mean, I've been there myself, but never as a garden tour.
Uh-huh.
And it's because of me. Your audience is going to hate me. I just find the garden somewhat the same.
Really?
Lots of beautiful, of course, beautiful containers and lavenders and sages. But I don't know. I got to get over it, I guess.
Have you been to...
We'll go soon. Everybody wants me to go, so I got to do it.
Have you been to Bomarzo, north of Rome? I wouldn't even describe it as a garden, per se. It's more of a Baroque amusement park. That's one of the most spectacular...
Well, let's you and I do one, then. We'll see if we can come up with something that people will like.
I'd love to help you with that, because I've visited quite a few off-the-beaten-path ones, Alan.
Yeah.
And I speak Italian, so if you want help.
We have an off-the-beaten-track. We've done an off-the-beaten-path one to crazy places in England, maybe, mainly. But there's lots of places to visit, and we've been pretty successful so far.
So where do you personally want to go? Not necessarily with a tour, but if you could go anywhere to visit plants in their environment, to visit a garden or landscape, where do you want to go that you haven't been yet?
Eastern Europe.
Ah.
I want to go to, many of those places that were behind the Iron Curtain and have now opened up. I want to go to Poland and further east into Russia and see plants. There's lots of touring to Russia by cruise boats and stuff, but
yes.
I'd love to do that. And I can do it. It just takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah,
it's a crew of two people here that run this thing, and really mainly one. So if I just go myself, that's very good. And I would also myself go back to you know, New Zealand is a picture-perfect place around every corner. There's fabulous plants everywhere.
Right.
And Australia particularly, well, New Zealand and the North Island, and then Australia as you get a little bit further north, are just weird stuff, which is great fun.
Now, Alan, let me ask you, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. One of the ways, of course, we know your writing and we know who you are and, you know, we've been following your books for years. But one of the ways that we actually physically got to you was through Maria Zampini, a mutual friend of ours. Are you doing work with the HGTV plant collection?
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
I think that, well, first of all, for those of you who do know Maria, she's pretty fabulous.
Yeah.
And the HGTV, home gardening television, has launched a signature group of plants so that in the garden centers, it just kind of got started last year, you will see containers, well, you'll see plants with the HGTV logo on the container that we have chosen for lifestyle gardening.
Right.
I.e., you know, the names are on it for sure, but these may not be the newest of the new, but they're going to be the best of the best. And we're trying to, we just, in fact, had a meeting on what perennials we're putting in for 2015 and 16. It's I think going to be a terrific program. It isn't just one more brand of plants that garden centers get tired of and people don't understand. This is truly something for anybody and for people who are designing, for people who are just on their deck. I think it's going to be terrific.
So how are the garden centers receiving this line of plants?
Are they buying into it?
What are they excited by it? It does a lot of work for them, which is great.
Well, here's the thing. Garden centers, you know, they get bombarded by everybody.
Right.
And, you know, while it's really good, it is the world we live in is brands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, for better or for worse, this branding, whether it's
right. Tommy Hilfiger,
Kleenex, or whatever it is, you know, it's a brand that people recognize. And so there's a lot of brands out there on plants, too, and the garden centers get a little tired of it, only because they'd like to be part of something different, but it also has to be something that people can, you know, kind of embrace. So this is a new program, and we certainly have some great garden centers that are into this, and I think it's not going to be every garden center. It's going to be those who, to use the term, buy into it. In other words, really get excited about it. So they, on their websites or whatever they do, they're telling people about it. Because I don't care what the brand is. My daughter's going to go in there and say, oh, HGTV, I've heard of that. That's great. But, you know, so what? And if it's hidden somewhere in some corner, it's not going to do anything.
Yes.
But if it's out front and center with the HGTV and the people in the garden center excited, I think this is going to be terrific.
I think so, too. And I think it's going to get the general public interested in what plants they're selecting and why. I think it validates everything.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. Really.
And I think the design...
Well, back to, I'm certainly not, nothing to do with me, but my comment on, today it's all about lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't, maybe you could, but my daughter couldn't tell me one single red geranium from another or one single, you know, a still deer or anything else from another, but she knows what she wants.
Right.
And what we have to do for the daughters of the world is we have to put out plants, regardless of the name, that are going to perform for them.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, it has to be plants that may be different than those in Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, horticulture is global. We get plants from all over the world, but gardening is local. And
yes.
So we want to be sure that an HGTV or other things, and certainly anything I'm telling you about on those app or whatever else, are plants that I know my daughter's going to come back and get a second time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can't afford to just throw anything out there because it's cheap. It doesn't work.
It's true. We were at the show. We were talking with some people from nurseries, big nurseries like Monrovia, and they were saying there's too many plants being introduced into the marketplace now. They're just throwing, you know, cultivar after cultivar out there at people, and people don't even know what to choose.
Can I tell you a story?
Please. Sure.
So this is another true story, and it goes to what you're saying, and I agree with you. You know, you can say, gee, it's great we have so much choice. The fact is we're way too confused.
Yeah.
So I have a greenhouse at Georgia. I play with all these new, weird, wide, wonderful plants. I got stuff in this greenhouse that, you know, is just crazy, and a few other things as well. So one evening at 5 o'clock, we're just sort of relaxing. This lady walks in, and she says, oh, I understand your plants are for sale. This is a research greenhouse. And we said, no, I think you're confused with some plant sale down the road. She says, well, can I look around anyway? And she was determined to buy something. So after about 15 minutes, she came out of the greenhouse with two plants in her hand. She said, I'd like to buy these. And I said, well, okay. And I looked at her plant. Now, remember, there was everything in there, reds and greens and yellows and blues and fabulous and things. And you know what she came out with?
Oh, no.
She came out with one pot of Better Boy tomato and one pot of Leyland cypress. And I looked at her. I mean, she came from somewhere to buy plants. I said, why, when you had everything there that you didn't know was for sale or not, you had everything in front of you, why did you buy a Better Boy tomato and a Leyland cypress? And she said, that's all I recognize.
Yeah. Oh.
And that goes to the heart of some of these new things.
Yeah.
We're throwing so many things at people that they don't recognize that they're getting scared. So, yeah, and again, that's for another day, ladies, that we could talk about how to do this better. But that comment is absolutely true. And we just have to do things better because breeders are never going to stop breeding plants.
Right, right.
No, they're not. I mean, how many red astilbes are there? How many more red astilbes do we need?
How many coral bells and, you know, don't get me started.
Oh,
I still be seeing red astilbes. I love horticulture puns.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Anyway, it's great that all these things are there. We just have to be a little smarter and not scaring people away.
And that's what's great about your app, too. You don't have 1,000 plants on it, Alan. Do you know what I mean?
Simple.
And you narrowed it down. To ones that work, you know, if people would focus.
I think it's ones that I think work. You know, there's lots of others that work as well. That,
right.
Like you said, why confuse the issue? Here's 10, here's 5, here's whatever.
Right.
And, you know, just give it a go. And, you know, there's other things out there to be sure.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we've hit the time limit. I'm sorry, Alan. We're just getting started.
We have to have you back.
We have to have you back. We'd love to hear more of your stories. And I really want to go on one of those tours with you.
Well, let people know about my website when you have a chance.
Yes, you want to...
It's just alanarmitage.net, and all that stuff's on there. And we will be putting things up there about books and all that other stuff.
We'll post a link this week. We always do follow-up postings on our Facebook page about our guests. So we're glad that you could join us today. Thank you for being on We Dig Plants.
And thank you for all of your grave digging.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. It's been great fun.
Okay.
All the best now.
Thanks for joining us.
Audience.
Happy gardening.
Bye-bye.
This show was produced and engineered by Jack Inslee, the one and only. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Remember to join our Facebook page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants, to stay current on our projects and upcoming shows.
And you can win some free stuff. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.